Blog Talk Radio.
Too much month left over at the end of the money? Tired of stretching out your paycheck to the last penny? Learn how to think like a millionaire, live within your means, and find true financial independence with Heather Wagenhals, Unlock Your Wealth Radio. Tune in to the midweek update for all the tips and tricks you'll need to manage your money. Here's your host, Heather Wagenhals.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. Welcome to the broadcast. You are listening to Heather Wagenhals' Unlock Your Wealth Radio. It's our midweek update this Wednesday, November 18th, and we have a great show in store for you. So, for those of you who are just joining us for the first time, this Wednesday for 30 minutes and every Saturday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, we broadcast the Unlock Your Wealth radio program and talk about crisis management and financial wellness tools designed to help everyone, man, woman, and child alike, manage their finances and attitudes for the single purpose of achieving financial independence. And this Wednesday is no exception. We had an incredible show last week. If you didn't catch Saturday's show, I encourage you to download it because nobody answered the trivia question either. So you could probably email in to win if you have the answer to that trivia question we asked over the weekend. But last weekend was hope for the best, plan for the worst, and it was all about ensuring our financial future. So I encourage you to download and listen to that. Also, if you have considered converting your qualified retirement plans into self-directed IRAs, we had David Coe on, and he talked about just how to do that, what the pitfalls are, and what to avoid when creating your self-directed IRA for real estate investment. So tune in, download that. It's also available on iTunes if you don't listen to it directly from the show page or from our website at www.unlockyourwealth.com. On today's show, we have great minutes on your money, and we also have the Millionaire Minute from Saturday, which we're going to do. I wanted to talk to you this week because for those of you that have been hanging out with us this whole season, or at least joined us by the second episode of this season, you remember that we started taking action, making assessment of our financial plan and our finances, and specifically our spending. And you started with your assessment envelope for those of us who started back then. What we did was, instead of making a bunch of decisions about our finances, we decided to assess our spending habits and patterns, and all we did was collect our receipts for everything. If we went to a vending machine where receipts aren't dispensed, we created receipts. If we gave our kids allowance, we also put in a slip of paper with whatever we spent on allowance for them. And we just monitored, in the sense of silently monitoring, our spending, because we spend differently at the beginning of the paycheck versus the end of the paycheck. And additionally, we spend differently at the beginning of the month versus the end of the month based on what bills are coming in, how much money we have left, any unexpected expenses that come up. So instead of trying to create a budget, because we all know budgeting doesn't work, it's like dieting. It's a yo-yo thing. It's something that people go on to and come off of. And just like dieting, when people come off budgeting, they usually go nuts when they fall off the wagon and create a worser, is that a word, a worse financial situation than what they had when they started. So this week, we're going to go through all about how do we break the budget, and we are going to grab our assessment envelopes, and we're going to go through them. And we're going to evaluate our spending. We're going to drop it into the different categories, and we are going to tweak it. And so you want to tune in because there's a specific way to do this where we maintain the benefits of what we're doing currently, but we create new avenues for saving money and reducing debt. So it'll be a great show this Saturday. Additionally, we will also have Paul Richard on as our Investor's Edge guest, and he is president of the Nonprofit Institute for Consumer Financial Education. And it's a great nonprofit organization that promotes financial literacy. And I've earned some credentials from them for different areas of expertise, and I'm really proud to be affiliated with this organization. So we'll have Paul on talking about what they do and what's offered. And for those of you that are interested in personal finance and maybe some aspect of it as a career, you'll want to tune in because he'll talk about all the different certifications that you can earn and qualifications you can acquire to work within the financial services industry. So it'll be pretty exciting. So make sure you tune in on Saturday. For this week's Minutes on Your Money, we have a couple of different articles. I like this by Diana Yoakam. She wrote this for The Motley Fool. Don't blow off these four year-end money must-dos. And these are pretty good here, so I wanted to talk about them today. Number one, she says, slash next year's out-of-pocket health care slash dependent care expenses. And she says, during open benefits enrollment, you not only have the opportunity to tweak your health care coverage, but also to secure savings of 25% or more on all of those out-of-pocket medical and dependent care expenses. This cost-cutting technique is possible with what the government created, these flexible spending accounts, also known as FSAs. And they come in two flavors. I like how she describes this. Medical and dependent care. And in a nutshell, you fund your FSA with pre-tax dollars taken out of every paycheck. When you incur the expenses not covered by your health insurance plan, or if you write a check for dependent care, like if your children are going to a preschool or an after-school care program, this would be a way that you could use pre-tax dollars and not have to set aside money for Uncle Sam first and then figure out how you're going to claim it and get it back. So all you need to do is go to your employer and talk to your human relations department and ask them for a plan pamphlet for eligible expenses. So your must-do for this category is to sign up. If you're not enrolled in your employer's FSA plan, you have to do it now. If you would have contributed $1,200, which is about the national average, to a medical or dependent care FSA and you're in the 25% tax bracket, you'll save about $420 annually by doing it this way. And that is including federal and Social Security taxes paid. So it's about $35 a month. So I don't know about you, but if you remember me, there's two ways to get rich. One is the passive way, and you can do it super slowly by putting away a dollar a day. And at $35 a month, you could fund your retirement and be a millionaire. So here's one extra way that you can become a millionaire slowly, simply by altering your health care and dependent care expenses. The second thing that Diana talks about is to minimize next April's tax tab. She says, time and money are short around the holidays, but saving strategically to minimize your April tax hit is the best gift you can give yourself. Right now, see whether your April tax is scheduled to max out your employer-sponsored retirement plan. If you're not, contribution limits this year are $16,500, and if you're 50 or older, you may be eligible to contribute up to $22,000, especially with 401ks. If you remember just a couple weeks ago on Minutes on Your Money, we talked about 401ks coming back in fashion and employer matching. It's silly not to contribute. If you put away a dollar and your employer will match that, even 25% or 50%, if every dollar you put away, they give you 25 cents or 50 cents, that's free money. Do you know how long it takes you to earn that kind of interest on a dollar in a regular savings vehicle? Even in a mutual fund, it would take you 2 years to accumulate a $25 appreciation of that money. So it's instant when you contribute to your employer 401k, and you're reducing your taxes. So your must-do assignment from them is that you need to take and go to your employer and bump up your retirement plan contribution. Max that baby out. Since the remaining numbers of pay periods before the deadline is dwindling, the opportunities for maxing out your 401k and other employer-sponsored plans are dwindling. So what you need to do is find out whether your plan lets you defer a heftier chunk of your final 2009 paycheck. Some employers will allow up to 100% of your check to be deferred. One of the things that she comments and says is it may be painful to pass up the pay, especially at holiday time when everybody's got their hands out for a Christmas gift, but giving up the compounding tax-deferred income is way worse than dealing with one or two missing paychecks. What's more, socking away money in a traditional retirement plan reduces your taxable income. Again, if you're in the 25% tax bracket, you'll shave off $250 off of every $1,000 you contribute. So that's huge. So not only can you get your employer to match, but now you're also going to get money back from Uncle Sam that you don't have to pay. So don't we all love it when we can keep more of our money? And there's a lot of things out there that we can do to do that, but so many people just don't take advantage of it. They'd rather whine instead of being proactive. So you've got to get going. So funding your IRA is another one. So let's step outside of just the employer matching, but what you can't do is you've got to get going on your IRA. Now, you can wait up until 2010, April 15th of next year to max that baby out for this year. But that's another $4,000 you can take and get a tax-deferred deposit. You got to make these decisions, you know. So maxing out your employer has to occur by the end of the year, but you can still work on this year's IRA contribution into the spring of next year. So as we sit and work with our Break the Budget and create our healthy savings and spending plan this Saturday, think about these numbers that you're going to need to be able to get that tax deduction for this year and how you can work it into the first 4 months of next year and figure out how you can sock that away. It's a little bit of deprivation now, but it's a whole lot more reward later on down the road when you don't have to hope and pray and wish that there's a Social Security check waiting for you. The third thing that Diana talks about for your four of the year in money must do's is prioritize your final paychecks. Once you have this year's final pay stub in hand, don't just gawk at the size of Uncle Sam's take. Strategize a few last-minute tax time maneuvers. You must put off collecting income if you can. It's hard to postpone a paycheck, particularly during the spendy holiday stretch. But she says deferring some compensation, such as a bonus, or if you're retired, a retirement account withdrawal for one more month, just pushing it into January, may be a better long-term financial move. Also note how your remaining paydays might affect your eligibility to make deductible IRA contributions both this year and next. Think about this. If you got a pay raise this year and this last couple of paychecks will push you into the next higher tax bracket, which would actually make you take home less than what the raise provided for you, this is a great strategy. And if you have created your healthy savings and spending plan from last season and you have an emergency fund, you should be able to make it a few weeks till you push that off into the next year. And the value of pushing that off, especially employee bonuses and things, because that's a big chunk of money, getting it right at the end of the year, you don't get to really use that, but you got to pay the taxes on it. If you push it into January, now you've got 12 months to use that money without having to pay the income tax on it. It's so much better for you financially. Just remember, I am not a tax attorney, nor do I play one on TV, but consult your tax attorney or CPA. Wherever you go to get your taxes done, consult them about these last-minute money savers, and you might be able to capitalize on some of the new rules tax-wise and put more money in your wallet for you and your family. Now, things that you can consider doing is withholding. More than 70% of Americans overpay their taxes every year. Now, I'm going to give you some food for thought here. A refund is always nice to get a big chunk of money that you, quote, don't think is yours or it's unexpected. But it's even nicer to have that money in your pocket the whole time earning interest instead of giving Uncle Sam a interest-free loan. So visit your HR department and, again, check your withholdings form on your W-4 assistant. And they have worksheets that you can go through to calculate those. You can change your withholdings at any time of the year, so there's no particular deadline looming. But while you're thinking about it, if it looks like you're going to have this April a big hefty check, start that adjustment now. So when you hit January, you're going to have more of your paycheck back in your hands. You can always change it back if you're not comfortable with it, but you need to put this on your must-do list. It's got to be something that you have to focus on, because you wouldn't loan your neighbor or a stranger an interest-free loan. You shouldn't loan Uncle Sam that money either, okay? This is a pay-as-you-go system, but it doesn't require you to overpay as you go. So check your withholdings, and if you know you're getting a check, you can bump that up, and there's a simple formula based on your income to help you figure out how to break even. And last but not least, pretty up your portfolio. Yeah, it sure has been a crappy year on Wall Street, but the IRS kindly offers a little ointment for those who have taken a big boo-boo. You can reduce your capital gains taxes that you owe on any investment that you held and sold for a profit in a regular taxable account by offsetting that tax tab with capital losses from the stocks that you have that have declined in value. So if you've seen big losses, getting a tax break is a little bit of good news. So before the end of the year, sit with your tax advisor and figure that out. Now, things that you must do is sell loser stocks. You never really realize any investment loss until you sell. But if these have not been performing and then after the stock market has played its little game, you're not doing any better, you need to get rid of those floundering investments and put the money into another investment, or wait 31 days and buy the investment back. The reason why you wait 31 days is to avoid the wash sale rules where you're trying to limit your losses. But tax loss selling must be completed by December 31. So if you think that that's going to help you, if the value is not there and the stock isn't performing and the likelihood of it starting to perform isn't going to be there either, you want to do that, and you want to do it strategically before December 31st. But don't do it willy-nilly. If you bought stock at multiple cost bases, like if you were dollar cost averaging, you want to sell the most expensive shares you bought first. And if you don't have capital gains in your taxable account to offset the losses, but you still have investments worth less than what you paid for them, you can use the capital losses to reduce your ordinary income by up to $3,000 a year. So if you're in the 25% tax bracket, doing so will reduce your taxes by $750. So that's something that you can think about. Now, something you don't have to do right away is you don't have to dump every loser stock in your portfolio. But you can carry over your losses. So you may want to, if you're holding out hope for certain stocks that you think are just going to be lagging but will be performers, hang on to them and don't dump them so quick. Again, this is why it's so important that you meet with your financial advisor to go through all the ramifications of portfolio moves, but you want to make sure you get that done before the end of the year. And with the holidays coming up, who knows who's going to still be working. So the sooner you can schedule that, the better. Now, I also wanted to talk to you about money and happiness. Money and happiness. High interest checking, is it a gift or is it a gimmick? Laura Rowley writes for Yahoo Personal Finance, over the last 2 years, community banks and credit unions offering checking accounts with interest rates as high as 5% have proliferated throughout the country. The rates are far superior to returns offered by traditional savings account and CDs. And since the accounts are FDIC insured, they're a conservative place to park cash. It's outpacing inflation by 1%. But account holders have to jump through a number of hoops to earn that high interest, sparking a debate over whether or not they're worth the effort. So this is something that you got to think about. Often known as reward checking, the accounts are free with no minimum balance, and they provide refunds for fees incurred using other banks' ATMs. Interest rates are currently as much as 4.5% annually for cardholders who meet certain criteria, typically 10 or more debit transactions a month, use of online bill pay, an ACH transfer or a direct deposit, and receipt of account statements by email. Institutions cap the amount of money that can receive the high interest rate to a maximum of $25,000 to $50,000. So you need to check that fine print. Banks can offer juicy returns because the account requirements reduce a lot of processing, printing, and mailing costs. Therefore, they have a higher return. For those account holders, though, who fail to meet the rules, receive no interest on their balance for that month or a nominal rate, which is typically less than half of a percent. So, again, are they really super glamorous? BankView, an Austin, Texas-based software company, is the backbone of the vast majority of the high-interest checking accounts provided by smaller banks and credit unions. The firm has 700 institutional clients with a combined $12 to $13 billion in the high-interest checking deposits. BankView monitors and analyzes the profitability profile of each customer within these institutions to ensure the accounts offer enough profit to the bank to justify the high rates of interest. Now, deposits are growing, says BankView CEO Gabriel Krajicek. Over the last 12 months, the average balance in a reward checking account increased by $2,000. Now, how much of that money is leaving credit card accounts or mega banks in the stock market is hard to track, he says, but we think that that has a lot to do with dissatisfaction of people with the mega banks and frustration with credit card reward programs that aren't as attractive as they used to be. So meeting the minimum, though, is a big concern. At least one community banking executive calls the accounts a gimmick. It says, because the institutions won't make money if all of its customers follow the rules. Our view is that they are luring people in with potential high interest, but the only way banks make money is when the customers don't meet the standards, says Steve Jones, executive VP of retail banking at Riverbank, which has 7 branches in northeastern Massachusetts and southern New Hampshire. So Riverbank offers a free checking account with 0.5% interest, 5 to 10 cents cash back for each debit card transaction, and up to $15 in ATM rebates. Jones says his firm considered adding the higher interest checking accounts a few years ago, but said that the only way we would make money is if about one-third of the customers who signed up for them didn't meet the standard in a given month. And we don't believe in making money by having customers screw up. So they're pretty excited about not doing these and thinking that they're a gimmick. And that's where the rub lies. For some consumers, it's actually a challenge to do 10 debits in 30 days. These accounts tend to work best for younger customers, says Greg McBride, senior financial analyst with Bankrate.com, because younger people would sooner leave without their car keys than their debit cards, so it's a good fit there. I know that for a long time, I've always referred to myself as the queen of swipe. So if you are fitting that criteria, it would be a good value for you. But don't sign up for the account if you don't think that you can make those criteria. And now, the moment you've all been waiting for. Yes, it is the Millionaire Minute, this segment where we crawl into the heads of top millionaire thinkers and put out 60 seconds of tools you can incorporate into your life right now today. And we brought you these last Saturday, these 10 traits that make you filthy rich by Jeffrey Strain. The 10 traits are, one, patience. Patience is one of the most important traits when it comes to saving money. This means waiting until something you want fits into your budget instead of putting it on credit. Number two, satisfaction. When you're satisfied, there is no reason to spend money on non-essentials. The sole purpose of commercials is to make you feel like you, by buying this product or service, will make you happier, wealthier, and better looking, and improve whatever isn't bringing you satisfaction. Number three, organization. Being organized can make you more productive and ensure that all the many issues pertaining to personal finances are addressed. It also means, by being organized, not paying late fees, not buying two of everything, and knowing your deadlines and paying early, not just on time, so you know your debts are credited properly. Number four, discipline. You need the discipline to continue to save money for specific long-term goals every month. Personal finance isn't a way to get rich quick, but it's a disciplined execution of your lifetime plans. Number five, reflectiveness. It's important to be able to look at your financial decisions and reflect on their results. Monitor, 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 just like we do in the review, revise, and recommit key. Number six, creativity. The economy and our earnings don't always match our expectations. Unexpected developments wreak havoc on elaborate financial plans. When this happens, changes are needed to deal with the new circumstances, and creativity is essential to accomplish this. Number seven, curiosity. Having curiosity helps you learn, study, and improve yourself. Number eight, risk-taking. To build wealth, one needs to be willing to take risks. This doesn't mean uncalculated risks. It means weighing all the options and taking calculated risks when appropriate. Number nine, goal-oriented. The importance of setting and working toward goals is obvious. If you don't know where you're going, it is very difficult to get there. And last but not least, hard and smart working, creating wealth and staying out of debt rarely comes without a lot of hard work. Many people might hope that the lottery will solve all their financial problems, but the true path to financial freedom, however, is to work hard and earn money while educating yourself to continue to have more value and increase your salary. Now, fully and completely integrate these habits now. See yourself in this way. Look forward into the future and watch how differently people will respond to you. And imagine yourself with these successes already. Create some affirmations with these tools as well to reinforce what you have just integrated into your personality. And that's your Millionaire Minute. Again, this week is Break the Budget. So tune in Saturday. Also, Paul Richards from the Institute for for Consumer Financial Education will be joining us on our Investor's Edge to give you just another leg up to help you manage your money that much more effectively. Thanks for tuning in to the Midweek Update with Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, and we will see you Saturday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
I've had it up to here, listening to a small segment of people trying to put down America. America's the greatest land on earth, and we ought to be proud of what we have. I'm proud of America. I'm proud of our people, and I'm going to prove it. We're American, and damn proud of it.
Frankly, I'm getting a little ticked off.
Go to hell.